I am a sea of love. 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 You are a sea of love. You are a sea of love. We are a sea of love. We are a sea of love. Hello and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. I'm Sama Morningstar, and I have some announcements to share with you about what's going on in the Womb Centered Healing Temple this summer 2021. First of all, I just want to say thank you so much for listening to the podcast. And if you'd like to receive announcements in an email form for each new podcast that comes out, as well as blog articles that are often related to the podcast topics, as well as upcoming courses and events, you can subscribe to the Womb Centered Healing Temple newsletter by visiting wombcenteredhealing.com. And I also encourage you, if you love this podcast, to please support it financially. You can subscribe financially through Anchor by making a monthly contribution of, you know, a small contribution. They start at 99 cents, you know, to really support this podcast and support the work that I'm doing to make all of this wonderful information available to you and inspire you to think about the womb as the center of your universe. Once again, return to that womb of wisdom that resides within you. So if that feels like something you want to support financially, that's how you can do it. Also, if you're interested in diving deeper into some of the topics and to really take a period of devotion in your life, devote some time and some energy in your life to deepening this practice of womb-centered living, I encourage you to take a look at the courses and workshops, and particularly the Biomystical Womb Apprenticeship program that you can learn more about by visiting wombcenteredhealing.com. And there's a button up at the top of the page that says Biomystical Womb Apprenticeship. You can go there and listen to some introductory videos and look at the details of the program. And you don't have to do the whole 13-month program if you wanted to try out one of the 8 phases in the program. Each phase is about a month long. And I'm often sharing on the podcast and, you know, on these through the newsletter about the upcoming phases. So if you subscribe, then you'll start to get a sense of what the different phases are that are happening live throughout the year, but they're also available in recorded form, so you can do any of them at any time throughout the year to just dive deeper and really devote some time to discovering and learning about and reinitiating yourself into the power of the womb. So don't hesitate to visit the website, wombcenteredhealing.com, and connect in that way. All right, that's all for now. Enjoy the episode today. Thanks. Hello and welcome to the Womb Centered Healing Podcast. I'm Sama Morningstar, and I have Thea Summerdeer here with me. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast, Thea. I met Thea through a course, an online course that I took
about herbal wellness, particularly for the kidneys. And I, after I had a kid had come down with a bladder infection and kidney infection, and really felt that my kidneys were needing more support, and I wanted to learn more about it. And it was a wonderful course, and I learned a ton. And I've since really explored more with various teachers and teachings. And but I just want to thank you, Thea, for the good work that you put into that course, and helping me at a that helped me at a challenging time in my life of recovering from pretty serious illness. So really want to celebrate that, the good work that you're doing, and thank you for sharing your wisdom and for coming on the podcast and sharing more with us. And so Thea had reached out when I was inviting folks who wanted to share about the elements and womb wellness. And I was delighted to see that you reached out to participate in that thread of conversation here on the podcast. So I'd love for you to introduce yourself, share about your womb-centered healing journey and your journey with working with the elements and herbalism and all of that. Just get the conversation started.
Great. Well, thank you for having me, and thank you for healing, for, you know, taking the information and getting well and now sharing it with everybody else. It's been an incredible journey. So it's like, okay, so that was a lot there. I'll see, where do we want to start? So, you know, I started really my mother. I think I have to give my mother a lot of credit for putting me on the path, because she loved plants. She was a gardener. She was a rose gardener. She grew, you know, she showed her roses. So I guess you could call her an award-winning rose gardener. But she found so much peace in her garden, and she loved plants. And I was adopted and raised in a traditional Seminole Indian village. So I had a lot of exposure to native culture. And then we also spent all of my childhood summers in the Appalachian Mountains in North Carolina, which is where I live now. So, you know, these mountains boast the widest diversity of herbal plants on the planet here, and the mountain ranges in China, because both of those mountain ranges survived the ice age. And so, you know, herbs have just been, you know, plants specifically, very interested early on. I remember in elementary school doing a science project where I was studying plant sap. I thought, oh, this is the blood of plants. And, you know, I gathered all these plant saps and all these little vials and did this whole science project on plant blood sap. And but what that led to was I became a midwife when I was 19 years old. I was following an East Indian guru, and it was a built-in community of spiritual people who were starting their families. And there was a need for midwifery within that community. And so I kind of just jumped in. I witnessed my first birth. So that was 19 when I started following an East Indian guru and learning about, you know, esoteric religions and things like that. I attended my first birth when I was 23. And I saw my first birth when I was 22. And when I witnessed my first birth, I just said, I have to do this. There was no question in my mind that that was what I had to do. So I started apprenticing with the midwives that were available at that time. And this was in Florida. So lay midwifery was legal. And I was able to apprentice with some amazing midwives. And naturally, the herbs became part of my practice immediately. The herbs were life-saving. Susan Weed was such a huge teacher for us, because, I mean, we're going back a lot. I'm 66 this year, so we're going back over, you know, well over 40 years. And so the herbs were life-saving. And so, you know, herbal medicine was part of my midwifery practice. And then I had two children of my own. And then you know, life takes us where it does. And I ended up marrying a Native American shaman, and we on a path of Native American spirituality for many, many years. And then I came, when I moved back to these mountains, back to the mountains here in North Carolina, I got re-exposed to herbal medicine in a different way. I started a relationship with Patricia Kritzy Howell, who is the founder and of the Botanologos School of Herbal Studies. And she had started referring clients to me, and we started hiking together. And she kept saying, why don't you, you know, take my certification course in herbal medicine? And I'm thinking, well, why do I need to do that? You're already referring people to me, and, you know, we're walking on the trail together, and, you know, we're learning, you know, you're teaching me a lot on the trail. And I just, but Spirit said, no, that I needed to do that. And I did. And I took her course, and it changed my life because it introduced me to Chinese five element theory. Now I had been, and this is about 18 years ago now, but, you know, I was aware of Chinese medicine. I mean, you know, one of my midwifery partner's husband was an acupuncturist, and we used a lot of Chinese herbs. But to actually study Chinese five element, it's flipped a switch for me. And because it's very, it's the study of relationships. So it just brought a lot of things together for me that had been, you know, I'd studied this and I'd studied that, and, you know, from the spiritual path to, you know, the herbal medicine path, the midwifery path, but it just brought it all together in a form that helped me to make sense of all of it. And it's an elegant system, and it's alchemical. It's very alchemical because it's about those relationships. We say, you know, as above, so below, and as within, so without. Well, this is a way to really look through that lens of relationship of how everything is interconnected, and to be able to study it on a level that relates to health and wellness, that includes the spiritual, the physical, the mental, you know, the, you know, all of our bodies, really opened my mind. And because I was so excited about it, and I wanted to learn more. Herbal medicine schools are now teaching five element, but there wasn't, you know, a lot of places to just like study five element. And I really wanted to learn more. So I thought, how do you really learn something? You teach it. Mm. So that's what I started doing. So I started teaching five element theory, and it's been just fabulous. I've been teaching on Wise Woman for over 10 years, but this past year, what I've done is I've launched my own academy, Five Element Academy, where I'm expanding on these courses and bringing in new courses. So it's just been a path of, you know, bringing these elements into my practice as an herbalist, as a clinical herbalist. And so we're talking about, you know, womb awakening and womb awareness and healing. I know that's your focus. So we may want to, you know, get a little bit more fine-tuned into that one, and how, you know, how my path maybe has connected with that, obviously, as a midwife and as a mother and now a grandmother. Mm-hmm. So, So that's kind of basic.
You said my next question without me even having to ask the question.
Oh, good.
You know, yes, as a midwife and a mother and a grandmother, you know, you are aware, as many people who come on the podcast here and we start talking become aware, even if they weren't aware of it before, of the centrality of the womb. And it's so central, it's so fundamental, that it's very easy for us to take it for granted, to even to the point of neglecting the needs of the womb, and just not, you know, society and the way we were raised, many people are raised, perhaps not you given some of the influences in your upbringing, but many people are raised to really neglect and even exploit our womb energies without nourishing and giving back and replenishing. And I found that studying this the interaction of the elements, like you say, this the relationship of the elements and all of the organs in the body and how they relate, how the elements are nourishing and flowing through us with this awareness of the fundamental the fundamentalness, of the womb as the source of life. And I would love to hear you talk about that in relation to the five element theory and what awarenesses you've come to around that, because, you know, I'm thinking of some of the other speakers that have come on the show here have talked about this circular map of how the elements nourish each other and flow together in a sort of a cyclical way. But as far as I remember, the womb isn't specifically included in that map. And so I would love to hear your take on that, how the elements flow together with the different organs and how the womb is part of that.
Yeah. So the womb, the wisdom of the womb, I love how you said that. The wisdom of the womb is so fundamental to everything. And that is the water element. So it is covered in five element.
Okay.
Because that's where the ancestral inheritance comes through, is the water element. So, you know, the Jing, what we call the prenatal Jing, is the combination of our parents' essences. Mm-hmm. So those essences come together and create the essence that we are, so that when we're born, we come in with something called prenatal and postnatal Jing. So that ancestral inheritance is so precious, right? And so naturally that's all birthed through the womb, conceived and birthed through the womb. And so the kind of the theory, if you will, of how this works is that when a baby's born and takes that first breath, there's something called the shen, which is the spirit in Chinese five element. So when that baby's born and it takes its first breath, spirit is married with matter, right? So physical body, matter, and spirit come together in that first breath. And that is when the shin becomes anchored in the physical body. Now, when we go through any kind of trauma at any point in our lives, we might experience what's called a shin disturbance, which is the shin flees the body in order for us to be able to survive that trauma. And so there's, but that's fire element. So we would get into, you know, talking about the relationship between water and fire, but let me come back to the water element and when we receive that ancestral inheritance. So matter, mother, right? You know, so I think of earth, you know, the earth element, which literally creates our bodies. I mean, our bodies are literally being created from earth. What we eat, going through a transformational process. So also this study of five element is the other word for five element is the five phases of transformation. Sometimes it's called five element theory. Sometimes it's called the five phases of transformation. Mm. So there's this transformation that takes place when we eat food that becomes matter, that becomes our physical body. So in the marrying of spirit and matter, it's making me think of this, something I just want to share. In five element, when you see that circle, right, that's the nourishing cycle that you talked about, which is, you know, we have the control cycle, which is the shape of the pentagram, mm-hmm. right? And then we have the nourishing cycle, which is, which creates that circle that holds the elements. What's happened, and I hope I can talk about this in this way, but what happened was the patriarchy flipped it. So that the point of the star was on the top, mm. which is the domination of spirit over matter. Mm. So what I've done in my class is I've flipped it so that the triangle is at the bottom. So that's the water element. So rather than the fire element being at the top, the water element is at the bottom, right? Because normally it would have, you know, these points and then fire at the top, mm-hmm. which was the pointed star. And as we know, that inverted pentagram is the witch's symbol. Mm-hmm. You know, it was the symbol of women's power. Patriarchy flipped it. So anyway, so I flipped it back. So, you know, that water, that water element is at the foundation of everything. It is the deep feminine yin that gives rise to all of the organ systems. And the order for all of the other organ systems, you know, because the organ systems are paired in each of those elements with a yin and a yang organ. And the water element is what nourishes or keeps everything juicy. So in order to have a juicy life, we have to really protect that jing and that deep feminine yin. Mm. So I don't know, does that speak?
Oh, it's wonderful. And I'm wondering, do you have any graphics that, do you have these graphics, like perhaps on your computer that we can pull up? Okay, I'm gonna pause for a second. Okay, so here we have an image just to help people orient to what Thea was talking about. And so it looks like we have the circle of the nourishing cycle that we were talking about, and also this inverted pentagram that you were talking about, the flipping. And so it looks like it's pointing down to the winter and the salty. Can you share more about how the winter and the salty relates to the element of water and the womb, like you were just talking about?
Yeah, so this is actually an image that's from my class on the Wisdom of the Five Flavors.
Uh-huh.
So that's why you're seeing the five flavors here. So there's all this. So when I talk about this being an alchemical system, where, you know, as above, so below, it's all about the correspondences. So as above, so below is a correspondence. Mm-hmm. As within, so without is a correspondence. Within these five elements, you have all of these different correspondences. Mm-hmm. So winter corresponds with the water element. The flavor that corresponds with the water element is salty. Mm-hmm. And so that's kind of interesting. If you think about, you know, the baby in the womb and the amniotic fluid, that's a salty environment. Mm-hmm. And so many, you know, things that can happen during a pregnancy, whether you have, you know, that fluid is very, very important. Mm-hmm. A woman has three times more blood in her body, but it's a lot. I think 2/3 more blood in her body when she's pregnant than when she's not. So there's a lot of fluids that are being generated during a pregnancy. Mm-hmm. And the amniotic fluid is very important. If you have too much or you have too little is called agliohydramnios, or you can have, so you can have too little or too much fluid. So that balance is very important. And that's all being, so the organ system that corresponds with the water element, which is at the bottom there, is the kidneys and the adrenals. Mm-hmm. So when we get burned out, we live in this masculine, yang driven society that's valuing the human doing, not the human being. So when we get burned out, this is what is getting burned out, is our deep feminine yin water element. Mm-hmm. And this is so important, because this is what the future, you know, that when we talk about the next seven generations, how that baby is, you know, develops and is, you know, born, is going to affect the next seven generations. That is where it all starts. So having a healthy water element is so important, not getting burned out, not, you know, this whole, you know, all the stresses that we feel. And so the emotion that corresponds with the water element is fear. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably pretty appropriate for what we're experiencing on our planet right now, with fear being somewhat out of control. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I learned very early on as a midwife was how to discern between healthy fear and ungrounded fear. Because fear serves us, but if we but if our water element is out of balance, it's going to make it very difficult for us to discern between what is healthy fear and what is not ungrounded fears. So what else can I say about that?
I have some questions perhaps that, to just make more sense of this graphic for people who are watching on the video. So the womb, the yin of the water is associated with the salty flavor and the season of winter. And you flipped this pentagram. So the point of the star is pointing straight down. Now there are these other points of the star that are pointing to these other flavors, which also correspond to the other elements. And am I correct in assuming that summer is corresponding to the fire element?
Yes.
And that I'm a little bit surprised to see bitter corresponding with the fire element. I was thinking that pungent would be, or spicy would be corresponding with the fire element. Can you clarify that for us?
Well, that's a really big discussion, because that's why I started teaching the class on the wisdom of the five elements. Five flavors. Mm-hmm. This is something that used to be taught in acupuncture schools, and they've taken it out. When you do your acupuncture tests for your licensure, they don't ask any of these questions anymore. So this is something that's being lost.
Oh.
And it's a little bit too much for me to go into today, but I'll give you the basics of it. Mm-hmm. So what happens is the way that that's in relationship through the control cycle is that bitter and pungent are in relationship through the control element. So that is keeping, so pungent is actually keeping fire, under control, so to speak, or.
Well, that makes sense.
That might be easier, better for me to talk about bitter and salty, because this relationship between the fire and water element is pretty easy to talk about, because if we know that our fire is overheated, mm-hmm. that it's going to deplete the water element.
Yes.
And that if our water element is depleted, then it can't temper the fire element. So now we have fire burning out of control, which is nervous exhaustion and all of those kinds of things. So there's this really, it's called the temple of the palace of fire and ice. It's a really important relationship between the water and the fire element. I mean, we see it in our planet. It's like, the body ecology, it's what's happening on our planet is what's happening in our bodies. Mm-hmm. So the coolness of bitter, so bitter is very cooling. And this is why you'll see it being used a lot to cool an overheated liver, which is the wood element, which is sour in spring. But the bitter element is very cooling. So it helps. And then the salty is, so salt attracts water. Wherever salt goes, water flows.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So if we want to, but that's a really delicate balance too, right? It's like, if we're not getting enough salt, then, we don't have that balance. And the problem in our culture is that we're eating too much of the wrong kind of salt.
Right.
Instead of the seaweeds, one of the most deeply moistening foods that we could possibly eat to restore that water element is seaweed,
mm-hmm.
right? And nettles, that's where nettles comes in. It's very, and minerals. Minerals are dissolved in the water element, and they're very cooling, and we're mostly overheated. Our society is a very overheated society. So the bitters help to, the bitter, so here's how bitter fire works with salty water, is that bitter causes everything in the body that squirts to squirt.
Right.
So it's toning, it's a tonic, it's toning the gallbladder, it's toning the saliva gland, anything that's squirting, it's toning. So that's why you hear us talk about bitter tonics.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what helps to restore that water element, because it's toning that system. So the these all work together in relationship, and it's very complex actually, and that's why I'm teaching. I teach a whole class on it just separately.
Right. Well, I'm still a little confused though why this bitter, cooling, squirt inducing flavor is corresponding with fire, the element of fire, and the heat of summer, because that seems like an intrinsic control that's built into this correspondence. And perhaps, even though it might be complex, maybe you can slip into this relationship between the pungent, and autumn can also be very hot time, but what's the element that's associated with autumn then?
So autumn is the metal element.
Okay.
And that's the lungs and the small intestine.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of transformation that happens there. The lungs are doing the exchange of oxygen. You know, the small intestine is helping with that further transformation of the food that we eat as it's being eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
So pungent. So what you're seeing, now we have to, because this goes, you know, these arrows kind of go, it goes in a direction.
Mm-hmm.
So pungent and sour. So if you've got metal that's out of balance, you're going to want to include more sour in your diet, because it's about this control, the way it's in relationship in the control cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And we tend to eat pungents in the summertime because it's helping us to sweat. It's heating us up, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's warming us. And sour, like, you know, lemons and those kinds of things are very, well, we can get into, you know, how that's also affecting the stomach and the earth element, which is sweet. But they're basically, if you could imagine arrows going toward each other. So pungent has an arrow going this way and sour has an arrow going this way.
Mm-hmm.
So when one is out of balance, it needs a little bit more of this one to balance it.
Mm-hmm. And the same with between sweet and sour, and mm-hmm. the same between bitter and pungent.
Mm-hmm.
So just like
foods have, or, and herbs have, you know, hot and cold, the thermal nature of food.
Yeah.
So when we're giving herbs, we want to consider the thermal nature of the herbs. We also want to consider their flavor as well.
Which has a thermal quality too, like bitter flavor tends to have a cooling quality, and pungent, or is pungent spicy? Like let's take an herb, for example, ginger. Ginger has a very sort of hot sensation to the tongue,
yes.
Perhaps not as hot as cayenne or other chili type super hot things, but you know, there's even ways of measuring the degree of hotness. So is that equivalent when you say pungent? Are we also talking about hotness?
Yes. Yes. So you've got, you know, ginger, you've got onions.
Yeah.
Those
garlic, kinds. Cinnamon.
All that.
Black yeah. pepper.
Cinnamon is, you know, cinnamon's very warming.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little sweet. So cinnamon's actually more in the sweet.
And different herbs are going to have combinations of these different flavors, because it's not just straight flavor, except
right.
maybe
right.
some of the chili peppers are, I mean, you can't really taste anything else but hot. Pungent.
Caliente, yes.
Caliente.
But we tend to eat those in the summertime to make us sweat so that it cools us off.
Uh-huh. So it actually helps to regulate the fire in the body. And I've known that about ginger is very helpful for inflammatory conditions. So, you know,
and for the lungs, I mean, when we got alerted to COVID, the grocery store was sold out of ginger for months.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was really hard to get ginger because everybody was going for that for the lungs.
And for digestion as well, because
that's the carminative part of ginger.
Carminative. Could you explain that term again? I always get mixed up about these different terms.
Yeah, so carminative is warming. It's anything that warms the digestive system.
But specifically for the digestive system, carminative.
Yes.
Because we were talking about ginger being warming overall, but carminative means specifically warming for the digestive system.
That's the herbal action. So when we're talking about, you know, warming the body all over, I forgot what you just said, but anyway, yeah. So carminative is an herbal action that is specifically about warming the digestive system. The other warming that we're talking about is more circulatory. So that would be the fire element, which would be circulatory.
Boy, we could get really confused in here. It makes you, you know, realize that, oh my goodness, listening to a podcast with Thea and Thea and Salma isn't necessarily going to qualify one to become a five elements expert, is it? Because it seems like I really, the more I ask you and the more we talk about it, the more questions I have. It just feels like a really in-depth study and, you know, looking at these flavors and this map, you know, I've been interviewing different practitioners and it's making me more and more curious. I bet, right?
I love it. I mean, it's, you know, because it's just another lens, right? So when you start going through your spice cabinet and you're looking at, you know, it's the alchemy of cooking, right? And because that's really what this class is about, or part of what this class is about. You know, the elk is the wisdom of the five flavors. I get into the alchemy of cooking and all of that is we're bringing all that together because our food is our medicine.
Right. Well, luckily, my experience has been that food tastes the best when there's a balance of all of the flavors.
Mm. I personally really like sweet and hot.
Yeah, I do like a little bit more of one or the other. But like a cooking friend of mine, I'm going to go ahead and stop the screen share here. But a cooking friend of mine. Hold on one second.
I just stopped.
There we go. Thank you. Yeah. A cooking friend of mine at one point taught me her secret for making a good sauce. And that secret was to add an ingredient from each of the five flavors. So you needed a...
Well, you know, they say that Schisandra, the herb Schisandra, is a five-flavor herb. It has all of those...
All of those.
That's an adaptogen, so that's a really good place to start.
And actually, it's funny you should mention Schisandra because in your course about replenishing the kidney energies, or the part of the course that I took with you that talked about replenishing kidney energies, you mentioned Schisandra, and I got myself some Schisandra and I made some little honey Schisandra capsules, and occasionally I'll take some of those. Although my acupuncturist talked to me about Schisandra, the thermal quality of Schisandra being such that it, and I can never remember, like, is it a heating thing or is it a cooling, and that you wouldn't want to take it at certain times of the year because it might be too cooling or too heating.
I don't know. I'd have to refresh my...
Yeah, I think it's that it's really cooling.
Refresh.
Yeah, I think it's that it's cooling because of the bitter is strong enough that it's super cooling. So you might not want to take it during the winter time, but maybe in the summer and fall leading up to winter to build up the kidneys. I have to reconnect with her and ask her about that. But I've had this jar of honey, Schisandra honey, where I ground it up and mixed it with honey. And I take it, you know, little spoonfuls of it.
That sounds fabulous.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you put the ground herb in the honey?
Yeah. Yeah. And then you can kind of, if you make it thick enough, you can kind of make little balls of it and just like have, I started to do that so I can just pull out one little ball and just kind of chew it or just swallow it or drop a ball in a cup of hot water and drink it.
Oh, what a great thing to have in your tea. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Love that. We're so creative.
Yeah, I learned that method of herbal preparation, herbal honeys making from Cammy McBride in my herbal training was with her. My initial herbal training was with her, where we, she had a 9-month herbal medicine woman training where we went 1 week and a month for 9 months and made all kinds of herbal things and went on herb walks and things like that. And so she really sparked that, and we made herbal honeys and smeared them all over our faces. That was, I was hooked, you know.
We have a new place that just opened up here in Asheville that's a mead bar.
Oh, meads are so wonderful. I've been making meads for quite some time now. In fact, that is an ancestral wisdom that I've started to access. I started, like, because of what I learned from Cammy, I accidentally made meads one summer without even knowing what it was, because I added water to my herbal honey to make it easier to mix up. And then I had it in a jar thinking the honey's going to preserve the herb in the water. And then suddenly it was bubbling in the cabinet. and I would open it up and it went through a really not so good smelling or tasting phase, which most meads do. They go through an ugly phase, right? And I didn't want to just throw it out. And so I put the lid back on and put it back. And then later I opened it up again and it's this delicious elixir suddenly, right? And I had no idea what I was doing until years later when I discovered mead making and started intentionally making mead. So I don't have any left here, but this is my mead jar that I have on the ancestral, on my ancestor altar. And I have little shot glasses and little vials that I give offerings to the ancestors of honey mead. And then I drink it myself just as herbal medicine. Because at a certain point, I didn't want to be buying alcohol from the liquor store. Who knows who made it and how and what. And getting, like, really high quality organic alcohol is quite expensive. So I realized, you know what, I want to make my own alcohol. So I started making these honey meads, and actually you can make it with maple syrup as well. It's called an Acerglin if you make it with maple syrup. So, I mixed it with both. Well, actually.
That was a happy accident you had.
It was a very happy accident, and I didn't even realize that that's what it was, that there was a name for it, until I was, like, sharing it with somebody and said, oh, you made a mead. And then I kind of didn't really practice that for a while. My herbalism, I took a break to go study yoga and, you know, do yoga and breath work as my healing approach for a period of time. And then got way more into herbs again and started making honey meads and have remembered stories of honey mead making in my ancestral lineage as a central part of caring for ourselves and herbal medicine.
Well, you know what that's making me think of, and I just want to say I've never made mead, but I have made jun.
What's jun?
Jun, J-U-N. It's like a mead, but it's just a different mother, the different, you know, ferment mother. And but when you talk about, you know, honey, and it makes me think of the bees, of course, and that makes me think of red clover, which the bees so love. And I have a chapter on that in my book, Wisdom of the Plant Devas. And red clover is such an important womb herb.
It is. Well, I have a whole bag of red clover seeds that I'm planning on planting in the fall now, because it's a little late and our summer gets a little too hot for clover. And so I'll probably wait to plant it in the fall. But I have grown red clover on a number of occasions. The last round of red clover I grew, I'm still using the red clover because it took over. I mean, this red clover I grew was up to my ear, Tom, and I, you know, gave away pounds and pounds of it, you know, because it was
it can be hard to get. It's the most bizarre thing of why, when it's such an abundant herb, there have been times when I've tried to order it either through Frontier or, you know, Mountain Rose or one of the herb, and they're out of it. Mm-hmm. That's happened to me repeatedly. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, how can something that's so abundant be so hard to get? Mm-hmm. But I think it's also the purity of it, you know, getting it where it's grown. Not, you know, there's a lot of it on the roadsides.
Right.
And, you know, you don't want to be doing that one. But I mean, meadows full of it. And I usually go out. I'm not too far from the country where I live now, and I just go out and gather it in the meadows. But when I've needed a lot of it, mm-hmm. and tried to order it, I've actually had difficulty finding it out of stock. I have found it to be out of stock.
Mm-hmm. And so what do you feel? Can you share a little bit about your feeling about how red clover helps the womb, and where does it fit in these five elements and five flavors and thermally, and how it relates to the waters of the womb?
Well, it's sweet. Mm-hmm. So that would be earth element. I mean, there's a lot of the blends that I make, I'll just throw in red clover just to sweeten it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. This gives it a really nice sweet edge. The thing that's so amazing about red clover is that it's a very, very smart herb, and it knows if we need estrogen or if we have too much estrogen or not enough estrogen. Mm-hmm. So it's the way it interacts with the estrogen receptor sites. It either opens them or it closes them. So, you know, whether you're premenopausal or you're postmenopausal, if you're needing estrogen or you've got, you know, estrogen dominance, it's an herb that helps to regulate estrogen. And I have found, I've used it the most in my practice. I use it now more as a kind of as an alternative, as a, you know, to help with lymph flow. But I've used it the most in my practice with women who have very severe PMS or just issues going on with hormone balance, where they use it for 2 weeks out of every month from the time they ovulate. And that's going to get me on to wanting to talk about something else. But from the time they ovulate to the time they flow, if they'll just do it for that 2 week period, it will totally alleviate those PMS symptoms.
Oh, or, wow.
You know, both before menstruation and during menstruation.
Mm-hmm. So just red clover infusion by itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep, for those, just for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. It's a blood thinner. So you don't, you know, you want to be careful that you're not using it for somebody that has an issue, but you would have to really do it for a long time and do a lot of it. So I've not ever found that to be a problem, but it's something to be aware of.
But it could also be helpful for somebody who does have issues with like blood clots and things like that. But it could.
Well, if someone's passing clots and, you know, having clots when they're menstruating, that is an indication of stagnation.
Yeah. So, well, I wasn't talking about clots with menstruation. I was talking about blood clots in the body that are, you know, blocking things up.
It helps. Stuff. I think it helps that through, you know, the way that it helps the lymph flow as well.
Yes. Uh huh. Gotcha. Yeah.
But just talking about, and I know this is maybe jumping the subject, and if you don't want to go there, we don't have to. We can come back. But you know, when we talk about having somebody do that from the time that they ovulate till the time that they flow, and talking about, you know, honoring the wisdom of the womb, I think for women who are menstruating to be aware of their cycles in that way is so important.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I was really that I used natural birth control for from the time I had my son, which was when I was 23 until I was no longer menstruating, I used natural birth control. And I think it's so empowering for a woman to know her body enough to be able to do that one. Mm-hmm. And then it also honors our bodies in the way that we're not having to use hormones for birth control, mm-hmm. or, you know, devices, mm-hmm. or other, you know, and it also requires a partner. You know, it helps when you're in a committed relationship because then the partner is also tuned with your rhythms and your cycle, because everything happens in cycles. So if we could learn to trust those cycles, we would have so much less fear. Mm. And, you know, I mean, I'm just, you know, seeing so much reaction of fear, that if we were trusting the cycles, that everything happens in cycles, I don't think we would fear, you know, what's happening so much. So to be able to tune in to whether it's natural birth control or just, you know, making sure that, because that's the constant, right, is from ovulation to flow. And if you're marking that, I've marked that on my calendar for all of my fertile years. It's like, this is when I ovulate and this is when I flow. And then I learned when the stresses were that with, like, if I were traveling on an airplane, that was going to throw me off. That was going to set me back 2 days, or, you know, it just, you learn how your body responds to stress, mm-hmm. and you just get to observe that, and you get to share that with your partner, which creates a deepening intimacy. So I think one of the ways that we can honor our wombs is by, you know, really knowing our cycles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we talked about how the flavor of salty and the emotion of fear and the organs of the kidneys, it all corresponding to the water element and corresponding to the womb and being central to the womb and our connection to the womb. And you just spoke to a big fear of not that comes, that arises out of not understanding our cycles, and how that automatically, just that fear of not understanding our cycles, not understanding our fertility, and making us rely on, you know, chemical interventions and, you know, mechanical interventions to have control over our fertility. But which is still very fear oriented when we're trying to control something in that kind of invasive mechanical way, and that patriarchal dominating the body kind of a way. And it still induces fear. I mean, that's, nobody likes to be dominated. No body likes to be dominated that way. And it can, those methods in and of themselves induce an imbalance, it seems, in the kidneys, and, you know, all the side effects from hormonal birth control and all the inflammation from, you know, IUD devices and different devices that people, you know, they all sort of create and exacerbate this imbalance of too much fluids in certain places and not enough fluids in other places. And what I'm hearing you talking about is, if we can learn to, first of all, understand and connect with and be in harmonious partnership with and with our cycles, then that alleviates the fear that that ignorance and disconnection intrinsically creates, and brings the balancing emotion of, or experience of, trusting in those cycles and trusting in our bodies and letting that guide us and, you know, create greater intimacy in our relationships, and then we can relax. And it feels like, you know, when we talk about the emotions that are associated with each of the elements, that oftentimes we're talking about sort of the pathology, but there might also be a balancing emotion associated with each one. Do you talk about that sometimes when you're like, what's the balance of, seems to me like the balancing emotion, the healing emotion for the water element might be trust, right? Learning to trust again, and learning what you need to learn, taking care of yourself, having the healthy boundaries, you know, finding a place, what you need to set up so that you can relax and trust and not be in the unhealthy fear, you know, listening to the wisdom of the fear of like, oh, this needs to be tended to, and then actually doing the tending and finding a trust in oneself that I can take care of myself, and I don't have to worry about the catastrophe that that fear was alerting me to the possibility of, right? So there's this, these balancing emotions and practices that we can bring in. So I'm curious what you might have to say about that.
Absolutely. So that would be the highest emotion that corresponds. And the highest emotion that corresponds with the water element, I mean, with the fire element, is joy. Right. And let me think if I can, I've actually got a little list over here I'm going to grab.
Okay. Okay, you got your list.
I do, and it's because I can't keep everything, you know, none of us can keep everything in our heads all the time, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I want to talk about these, the higher emotions that do correspond with these different elements, but also you brought up a really good point, which is about an inner navigation system, you know, is developing the trust of an inner navigation system that's always leading us to exactly what we need in every given moment. And so,
and that I call that womb wisdom. I mean,
I love that.
Our womb wisdom is, if we can connect with that inner guidance system, I call that womb wisdom. People talk about a gut feeling, or I call it the womb feeling. You know, I mean, the gut and the womb, of course, are all sort of all right there. But the root of it is in the womb. And it doesn't matter if you have a uterus or not. There's a place, in fact, in Hindu spirituality, it's called the Purusha, which is, I'm sure you're familiar, perhaps you're familiar with that from your studies too, where that's your direct connection to your individual divine self, your individuated divine self, the aspect of the divine that is your unique divinity.
This is so important. This is so important because so much of how our culture is set up, our society is set up, is to cut us off from that.
And that's the womb is right there. And for people who don't have a uterus, for whatever reason, they weren't born with one, they have a different set of genitalia, there's a cutting off from access to the wisdom intrinsic there as well in the biology of it. And then that translates to that energetic cutting off from that wisdom as well.
But we've all been born through a womb.
Yes.
And so it's there. So it goes back, you know, we have that cellular memory in our bodies, all of us, male or female, right? So, you know, and that's an unbroken lineage.
Yeah.
You know? So we have access to all of that ancestral. You know, you talked about your ancestral, your ancestor altar. I also have an ancestor altar. And, you know, because we can connect back all the way to the beginning of time.
And that's what I work with a lot with the ancestral, for ancestral healing, is the ancient ancestors that predate some of this patriarchal wounding and those disconnections that we, that, you know, because oftentimes it's a traumatic experience in a lineage that will create a disconnection to that area. And
That's that Shin disturbance.
There we go. And there can be
that passed down.
Exactly. It's not just the Jing that gets passed down, or there might be a disturbance or a diminishment of the Jing because of a Shin disturbance. I don't know for, that's just intuitively what I'm feeling when we talk about these things. Yeah. And then you have less Jing for your life because of that Shin disturbance, and perhaps be replenished by healing that Shin disturbance as well.
Well, we say in herbal medicine that healing can't be accomplished with herbs until the Shin lives in the heart. So the organ system that corresponds with the fire element is the heart, and that, you know, herbal medicine will only take you so far until you have restored the Shin to the heart. In other words, if we're not fully embodied, how can we fully heal our body? And there are herbs that actually do help to restore the Shin to the heart. And practices, all that, you know, we talk about yoga and meditation, those are all practices that restore the Shin to the heart.
And I imagine this emotional wisdom that you're going to talk about now with your list of healing emotions, you know, because we might have talked about, you know, the fear and the anger can be, so oftentimes we think of the pathological degree of those emotions, But they're not necessarily intrinsically pathological. It's just when they get to a certain extreme because they've been avoided or not felt.
It's an expression.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So it's an expression of fear, an expression of anger, mm-hmm. right? So the organs are expressing these emotions. Those are called the root emotions. We have the root emotion and we have the higher emotions. So we're going to shift to talking about the higher emotion.
Yeah.
But all that is an expression of the organs. So we can know, you know, how imbalanced or balanced an organ system is by the emotions that are being expressed. Mm-hmm. And I can give some specific examples of that if you like.
Yeah.
So we're talking about the water elements. Let me stay with that. So the root emotion, like we said, is fear, mm-hmm. but the higher emotion is optimism. Mm-hmm. Right. So when we have a healthy water element, mm-hmm. you know, we're very optimistic.
Right.
You know, the archetype of the water element is the philosopher. And, you know, so when someone comes to me and I'm doing an intake, you can kind of get a sense of how optimistic somebody is,
yes.
or how fearful they are, right? So this is why it's such an elegant system, is it becomes an incredible diagnostic tool. Mm-hmm. When you start to put the overlays of these correspondences on somebody's health history, then you see how because it's a study of relationships. So it's a study of patterns, mm-hmm. and it's a study of relationships. So where Western medicine is just addressing the symptom that's being expressed in the moment, and you know what we're looking at is what were the expressions that happened on the timeline that actually led to this imbalance. So we're not starting with the imbalance, because the imbalance might be in the earth element, which is digestion, but it may be it started in the water element that then overheated a liver that's in the control cycle with the earth element. So we have an earth element out of balance because it started here. But when you get the health history and you see how the patterns emerged, that helps us to know where to go in with the herbs. At what level do we go in with the herbs? So it's really a fabulous diagnostic system.
Mm-hmm. To include the emotions in there.
Healing takes place on all levels. So right. We have to heal spiritually, emotionally, psychologically, and physically, or we're not healing, because mm-hmm. it'll express somewhere else.
Right.
You know, I'll just give one story about that is my ex-husband, who was a healer, Dr. Shaman Healer. He had many people with all kinds of remissions in the practice. One woman had a brain tumor. She was expected to, you know, live like, I don't know, weeks. And he worked with her. She went back, had a brain scan. There was no tumor. They were like blown away. But she didn't resolve everything. It resolved on a physical level, but there were underlying emotions. And she ended up committing, even after she healed the tumor and there was no tumor, she ended up committing suicide.
Oh, wow.
What was underlying that was she had given a baby up for adoption. Mm. And she had never healed that. She had never completed with that. So while all this other stuff got resolved to the point where she no longer needed to grow a tumor, there were still other things. So in other words, it'll seek expression somewhere else. We can take a symptom and we can get rid of that symptom, but if we're not resolving the underlying issue, it's going to just pop up over here and, you know, have its expression.
Well, I mean, that's why, you know, I've been developing and wanting and sharing this, you know, biomystical womb healing apprenticeship journey with folks. And, you know, I have sort of little pieces of it that I share, like hors d'oeuvres here and there, where, you know, there's movement and breath practices and there's
hors d'oeuvres with mead.
Right. Hors d'oeuvres with me. There we go. Okay. I'm getting inspiration here. And then they all lead to this sort of more all inclusive where we're going to do the herbalism. We're going to do the movement. We're going to do the self-reflection, the writing, the journaling. Mm-hmm. We're going to do the meditation. We're going to do, you know, all these different approaches to herbalism. Some of it's more like, really getting the nutrients and the medicinal qualities of the herbs and into the body but in a variety of different ways, topically, internally, and then also the essences, the energetics of the herbs. So also including flower essences and how they help us with the emotions and all this. So it's just this, you know, addressing it at all the different levels and at a pace that, and depending on each person, what aspect they're ready to, aspects they're ready to really dive into. Because, you know, I've tried to go down like the clinical route of, you know, some herbalists of just doing the nutritional and medicinal qualities of the herbs and looking at the symptoms and saying this herb is for that, but it just doesn't seem to go all the way. I end up receiving the people that tried it that way with this approach, and then it just didn't work for them because there was these other things that weren't being addressed with that super clinical approach.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love 5-Element, is because it incorporates all of that. And that's what you're doing. You're incorporating all of those things that are part of being, you know, in a human body living on planet Earth. Mm-hmm. We're in relationship, right? Yeah. Homo Paco Yasin. We're in relationship with all of it. Mm-hmm. So how can we just, you know, I mean, we live in, you know, this is Western medicine is a reductionist view. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of people who are practicing, you know, herbalism from a reductionist view.
Or mechanical approach.
Mechanical, that would be a better word, you know. So, you know, I have this symptom, what herb can I take for this symptom? You know, I mean, that's the question I get asked the most commonly.
Right, me too.
I'm like, oh, you're an herbalist. Well, I have this symptom and I don't want to do pharmaceuticals anymore because they're messing me up. Because they overheat the liver, all pharmaceuticals overheat the liver. So it's getting, you know, maybe it got better over here for a minute, but now everything's getting worse over here. So, oh, but I have this symptom. So what herb can I take for this symptom? And it's like, it's not how it works. The longest lasting results from herbal medicine is from its tonic ability to restore whole bodily systems. Mm-hmm. So that's something that's taken consistently over time, right? And we want a quick fix. It's like, give me a pill, make it go away. But there's no empowerment in that. So really everything I hear you talking about so beautifully is about empowerment, is, you know, becoming empowered to, you know, to know your, listen to your, our bodies are not confused. Mm-hmm. If we could learn to listen to our bodies, our wounds are not confused. It's like, it knows whether it's growing a boy or a girl, right? Our bodies are not confused. If we could learn to really listen to our bodies, we would know exactly what we need to do, what, you know, attract what we need, because we have everything we need in every given moment.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Thea, that's such a good note to pause on here, because I could sit here and talk with you all afternoon. And we're doing a podcast episode, so we can do a part two. You know, I'd love to, I'd like to talk about the whole liver, anger, that whole thing, because the suppression of anger, especially in female bodies, and that what that does to the liver. And, you know, I've talked about it many times on the podcast. So I'd love to hear your take on it, and maybe part two, but maybe you'll also come have an inspiration of something you'd like to come on and talk about, a specific, more specific topic, something that comes out of this, more questions, more reflections. But if folks want to get in touch with you online, or in any way, to learn more about what you have to offer, your practice, your trainings and things like that, how might they do so?
The best way is through my website, which is theasummerdeer.com. And that's Thea, T-H-E-A, summer like the season, because I was born in the summer. Mm-hmm. And deer like the four-legged, D-E-E-R, theasummerdeer.com. And then that will link you out to my blogs and my other websites and all the other things I've got going on. But I think that's probably the best place to land.
Okay.
And yeah.
All right, wonderful. So I'm planting seeds for future podcast episodes and perhaps collaborations of other sorts. Stay tuned, folks. If you liked hearing what Thea and I were discussing today, stay tuned for announcements about future options to talk with us, to hear what we're talking about, and reach out to Thea, of course, if you want to find out what she's up to. And also, listeners know that if you want to learn more about what's going on in the Womb Centered Healing Temple, you can go to wombcenteredhealing.com and find out all about that as well. Subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get announcements in the email about the latest blog episodes and the latest podcast episodes, as well as any upcoming events and courses that are coming out. So thank you so much once again. Do you have any parting words of wisdom for us today, Thea?
Just trust your inner guidance. Trust your inner guidance, because the choice point is the empowerment point. The choices that we are making, you know, information and knowledge helps us to make better informed choices. We need to have the information to make informed choices, and you're helping to disseminate that. I really appreciate that. So
beautiful. Yeah, when you were saying that, it made me, what came up for me is that we can interrupt the trauma patterns in the moment that might be perpetuating painful loops, difficult illnesses and things like that. We can interrupt it in the moment by being present and looking at the choices that we have to make. And that's not always easy. It can be really a stretch. And I've had recent circumstances where I really got to stretch and say, what are the trauma patterns that are happening, and what would interrupt that and help us find a different way to, you know, how can I respond in a different way that's not perpetuating the same patterns of harm and dis-ease? So,
well, that's why the first step in the six stages of healing in the wise woman tradition is do nothing.
That's right. And take that moment of like, beautiful. Oh, the first step in the wise woman tradition. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Thea. And thanks, listeners, for being with us. That's all for now. Until next time.